Let's talk about the seven principles, if we may, briefly. Let's talk on starting with habit number one, proactivity. And you don't just talk about proactivity from the standpoint of initiating things. Yeah, you're really talking about understanding what our choices are in life. So can you
Right. It basically means that we are not animals. We have a space between what happens to us and our response to what happens to us. Therefore, we can exercise our freedom to use that space. In fact, we have kind of a joke in our family, Tony, you'd be interested in. If anyone starts behaving in a kind of a victimism mentality, you know, and they start blaming someone, or look what someone did on this test to me, and I didn't even, wasn't prepared, someone starts behaving like a monkey. Someone may be doing dishes.
<That's great.
laughs> That, and then if the person
great
doesn't get the message fast, someone else picks it up until literally
the whole family is doing it. Right?
Really, like that, until that person just cracks up. They cannot maintain this victim mentality.
That's right.
So to be proactive means we can choose our response no matter what the circumstance. We can choose our attitude. And all that you teach is really, not all that you teach, but part of what you teach is embodied in that whole idea.
Yeah.
Then habit two, basically, is the principle of what I call the mental or the spiritual creation. That is where you decide what your life is about. That's where you go into your secret life and make your mission statement. And I would really encourage people, pay the price, get still, get into nature, get slow, see it as a process, don't push it, don't try to be efficient with yourself, just like it doesn't work if you're efficient with your spouse or your child. Just be slow, but be determined to decide what your life is about. And then do it with your family. I've done some marriage and family counseling, and the most helpful intervention I know is to help them develop a mission statement. They both were scripted differently, but how do you two want to deal with your problems? What kind of an immune system do you want to have, see?
Yeah.
So habit two at the business level means develop mission statements that embody from the bowels.
Yeah, that's so key, because otherwise if the executives...
It can't come from Mount Olympus.
Yeah.
Now, if it starts at Mount Olympus, then send it out as a first draft and say, we don't like it either, because it doesn't have your input.
Right.
And then listen to the input, be open to it. Yeah. Very few people, it takes high level of maturity to want input when you're convinced you're right. Very few people really want other people's opinions when they're convinced they're right.
Yeah.
Third is to live by it. I call that put first things first. The second is begin with the end in mind. What I do in audiences to teach the first three fast is get them to write the epitaph they'd like to have on their tombstone. Because it immediately gets them into an awareness state. They have to draw on imagination and conscience and explore their willpower. Am I willing to live by this, see?
That's neat.
Someone yesterday said to live the golden rule. So I said, you know what that means? Towards your children, towards your neighbors, toward when you're pushed to the hilt, are you prepared to go the distance? When you're alone, when you're in the dark, where your character is truly being tested? That's the true test, see? So that's habit three, is to put first things first. It means to organize yourself and execute around the central priorities of your life.
You had a neat thing I want to make sure I interject, because I really loved it, was you said habit number one is realize that you are the programmer. Habit number two is write the program. What are you really about? What are you going to do? What is the ultimate guiding principles? And then habit number three, I don't think you language, but I mean, it's live the program, isn't
it? Right, live it, or as to use the computer language, it would be run it.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
You're the programmer, write the program, now run it.
Yeah.
You're the architect, write the blueprint, now do the physical construction.
Yeah.
And those first three, done over and over, develop a private victory. Now, that's at the beginning stages. As you get more and more mature, then habit one changes its character.
Define maturity.
Maturity would mean that you have a sense of self sufficient to allow you to be both courageous and considerate.
Hmm.
Many people are very courageous, but they're not really empathic, sensitive, considerate, see, respectful. Many others are respectful, empathic, sensitive, but they don't have any courage, no drive. No standards, no sense of vision.
Is an organizing principle for your life a true north principle, the principle of balance?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
In fact, the time management thrust is on prioritization.
Yeah.
I suggest it should also adopt the principle of balance.
Yes.
And also the principle of principles, because not to get schedule centered.
Yeah.
but to be principle-centered and and people-focused, but principle-centered. You don't want to get people-centered, or what if they let you down? You've been devastated.
Talk about that, the concept of centeredness. I love it. You ran through about a dozen, if I remember correctly, relationship-centered, spouse-centered, money-centered, possession-centered.
Well, whatever becomes the center of your life, it's like a pair of glasses through which you see all of life. It's like your lens. See, so if you become centered, let's say, on your spouse, what happens when your spouse's weakness is exposed or your spouse is kind of in a bad mood towards you? It can be devastating to you. Now, what happens if you're principle-centered? Now you can look on the spouse's weakness with compassion and understanding. Why? Your security does not come from how your spouse treats you. Your security comes from your integrity to those principles.
So your center is the primary focus and means that you've designed for your life in order for you to feel like you have a direction, in order for you to feel security and so forth. Is that
security? And guidance and wisdom and power.
Okay.
Wisdom means your perspective and your balance. Power means your courage and your compassion, your power to have them both, see?
Where do those come from? What are those focused upon?
Those come from whatever's at the center of your life. If it comes from money, if your money gets lost, then look what's happened to your security.
It's gone.
What's happened to your guidance? You're totally discombobulated. What's happened to your sense of wisdom and balance and perspective? Some people have become enemy-centered. They literally are consumed with the weakness of another person. They'll begin to define their friends as to whether or not they're allies to them toward the enemy.
Yeah.
And if they're not, they'll say, you're my enemy too. People who are work-centered. A lot of people that have gone into multi-level marketing have become so work-centered that they have defined loved ones as customers.
Oh, gosh. Oh, no.
You know, and they go after their loved ones.
So what is, when you say you're principle-centered, what does that mean to you
specifically? Okay, now that means to me specifically that I see life through a set of balanced, organized set of principles.
Tell me some of them, for you personally.
Well, for me personally, they would deal with humility, which involves gratitude.
Yes.
And getting centered upon God, who is the source of all these principles.
Yes.
Second that comes from that is purity. Purity of motive, purity of thought, and also forgiveness. The necessity of having anything of my past that has been impure, not part of me at all today.
Yeah.
The third is charity. Out of purity comes, I now want to serve and to bless and to contribute. So you get an outward focus.
Yeah.
The fourth is productivity. That is, you have charity, but now you want to make a difference.
Yeah.
You have the feeling, but now, to use your language, you want to become an actor. You want to do something.
Yeah.
It's in action.
Yes.
See? So productivity. The fifth is effectiveness. You don't want to just be productive. You want to get results. So that's a whole different way of thinking than just being active. The sixth is the test always of effectiveness is integrity. Because you can always, you know, get more golden eggs and mess up the goose a little in some way if you're not careful.
Yeah.
Now, what's the test of integrity? It's courage. Because you can get integrity at a low level.
Sure. When it's not a test, it's not really integrity, really.
Yeah, when you don't have to be full of compassion and courage.
Right.
So courage comes in there. Courage, I see, is the quality of every quality at its highest testing point.
Hmm.
You know, everything reaches a point of test. That's where you exercise courage.
And that's when you move to the next level.
That's where you move to the next level, exactly. The next one is simplicity. I have a tendency to complicate. So I have to drive myself to focus on high leverage factors. That's why I have an organization. I delegate. Education has been delegated, essentially. I'll come in and give speeches like you're talking about, but I have a CEO I trust. See, he's delegated with the responsibility of running the business. I don't want to get my head into business. I want to get my head into ideas and teaching and people, see? So simplicity. Now, that's taken some doing. My wife just can't believe how much I delegate. I'm trying to get her to delegate more.
But you're delegating where you have trust and where you have competence.
Right, and where there's competence and integrity.
Yes.
The two foundations of trustworthiness.
Yes.
Which is the foundation of trust. Then you can move to empowerment. As long as there are systems and structures that are in alignment. Notice the four levels. The personal level is trustworthiness. Interpersonal, trust. Managerial, empowerment. Organizational, alignment.
Hmm.
There's the four principles of an organization, of the four levels of an organization.
Yes.
Then I go into what I call temperance, you know, where the way you live so that you're wise and you're judicious and you're careful and the way you take care of your body and your mind and so forth. Then the last three are justice, the whole philosophy of win-win and mutual respect, cheerfulness, so that you're not some heavy-handed preacher that is just into self-righteous and into no fun, no enjoyment, no, you know, all of that, and then wisdom, which is these are the kind of the 12 principles I live by.
So by living by those principles, you are better as a father, you're better as a parent, you're better probably in your money, all those areas you talked about other people getting centered in, you're probably more effective in as a result of that, and you can control these. So you've set up a game that's winnable in life instead of a game that's fearful.
They're all in your own circle of influence.
Exactly.
Not one of them.
Clarify that principle.
Okay, that's a key principle.
Yeah, it's very important.
Very important principle, because just try to imagine two circles. An outer circle we could call the circle of concern. Those are all the things you're worried about, things you can do nothing about, though, necessarily. But there's an inner circle inside that larger circle are concerns that you can do something about. I call that the circle of influence. Always give your energies there. It'll get larger. Most people give their energies to the outer circle. They're filled with victimism and why things don't work and so forth. And the inner circle will get smaller and smaller.
So you keep focusing on what you can do instead of what you can't do. Who you are and what you can deal with gets larger.
Anytime you think the problem is out there, that thought is the problem.
Yeah. Instead of saying, here's what I can do right now today. And if I keep doing this, the outer problems start to disappear.
Now, if people want to test this, I say give it a 30-day test. Just in your home, start with your home, start with your marriage. Stop confessing someone else's sins. Just start producing good things.
Yes.
Don't fight them. If you go home, the place is a mess, just start picking it up cheerfully. Then when you have your family council meeting, organize a way, build a relationship so that others do their part. If you don't have that culture yet, start moving toward it. Yeah. Point is, you're always doing something over which you have influence and control.
You have an interesting distinction. You talk about three kinds of problems: those you have direct control over, those you have indirect control over, and those that you have no control over.
Right.
And can you talk about what you should do with each of these and how you identify which are which?
Those problem areas you have direct control over, such as yourself, then you learn to change yourself. Those that you have indirect control over, that is with other people, you try to use different methods to influence them. And there are many, many methods. If one method doesn't work, you don't give up on the person.
Right.
You think of another method. Maybe you haven't listened to them enough.
Yeah. So we've gone deep on this process. I asked you about, you know, the principles and the idea of what you're centered on, and that was coming out of what we were talking about in terms of the third principle. Let's go back to the fourth habit that you teach.
Okay. One more word on the first, okay?
You sound pretty much
proactive.
Like me.
And
just
that
one
is,
more thing.
That is, every one of these habits at a higher level is manifested differently. For instance, to be proactive at the higher level would be to learn to forgive.
Yes, yes.
Okay, let's go to the fourth.
Let's review the first three now.
The first three, be
so we
proactive.
Bring everybody in. Remember, simplicity is one of the principles, right?
I know. What do you expect me to live what I teach?
No, I don't expect that. So number one is
okay, number one is to be proactive.
And that means,
to
again,
take responsibility, you're the programmer.
Great.
Number two, begin with the end in mind, basically means write a mission statement before you think of goals. Create the context for what your life is about, both principles and vision.
The and that third, can be as simple as a page that is they put thought into and that they're going to continue to improve over the course of their life. True?
Right.
Okay. Third?
Exactly. I noticed that Schwarzkopf was asked, what would you like on your epitaph? He said, a good soldier who served his country and loved his family. Now, if you analyze that one sentence, it contains many values.
Yeah.
Okay, the third is to put first things first. That's where the discipline and the commitment to live by the second comes. If you're building a house, every day you go into that blueprint shed and you study it and get your marching orders for the day.
Right.
Okay, now the first three represent the private victory. The consequence of the first three is totally amazing. You develop an abundance mentality, which means you're not threatened by other people.
Yeah.
You naturally, you don't see life as a zero-sum game, like there's a big piece of pie. See, most people were raised on the basis of being compared to other people.
Yeah.
So they have a hard time being even happy for their success of their own brother or sister.
Yeah.
They might say, I'm happy for you, my friend, but inwardly they're eating their heart out because They see life as a piece of pie.
Scarcity
someone
model.
Gets a hunk. It's a scarcity model.
Yeah.
What happens when you become principle-centered? You get focused upon the fact that life is not scarce. There's abundance. It's endless. There's no such
thing. And it's eternal.
And it is eternal. That's the power of what we're doing here. Okay. The development of people is an eternal kind of activity.
Yeah.
And also, it's universal. It pertains to your family, your kids. That's what's marvelous about our professional type work.
Yeah.
The fourth, to think win-win, is a way of expressing life as abundance. Don't see life as a zero-sum game.
Yeah.
The moment someone sees it as competition, you see it as cooperation. Just start behaving that way. How do you behave that way? Habit five, of all the things we do, is the most requested. It's interesting. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. See, most people listen with the intent to reply, not with the intent to understand.
Yes.
They really are not transcending their autobiography. They're listening maybe attentively, or they pretend to listen, or they listen selectively.
Yes.
That is, that reminds me, let me tell you this, and so forth.
Yes.
But to really listen empathically means that you get inside the head of another. Not that you agree at all. In fact, that isn't even the issue. It's that you understand. Agreement and disagreement is an irrelevant issue altogether. Once you understand, it's giving people psychological air. It's the ultimate affirmation of another person because you're saying, I value you. I value your world, your perceptions, your feelings. Not that I agree or disagree, that's not even an issue. I value you. What ultimate affirmation. Mm-hmm. That's psychological air to a person. Suck the air out of a person's room. All they want is air. Once they have air, it ceases to motivate them. Similarly, if you empathize truly, deeply, sincerely, consistently, you give people air, they stop fighting you. The defenses are lowered. They start getting into habit six, synergy.
Yeah.
New ideas, new insights are produced, where the whole is truly greater than the sum of the parts.
And where you have synergy, though, you make a very important point I want to make sure we get across, and that is you have to value differences.
Oh, yes, because in the difference lies the strength.
Mm.
If we were all perfect and had all qualities, we wouldn't need to value differences. But because we are imperfect and we lack qualities and we all act on an insufficiency of data, it is absolutely imperative that we value these differences. Because if we truly value, I value yours and yours with me, we create something new. We've had touches of that even in our interview today. And I might say, I've been interviewed probably hundreds of times, like, you know, you are by the media and so forth. You're the best interviewer I've had.
Well, thank you.
Because you have your questions are thoughtful, and because you really are trying to listen, and it tends to bring the best out of your guests. And maybe others have told you that, but
maybe it's because I love my guests too.
Well, I think that the synergy, almost every great class, you probably find it in your teaching, hinges on the edge of chaos. You don't know, it's just a brief edge, and all of a sudden a dynamic occurs that is truly serendipitous.
Yes.
That's so exciting.
Yes.
And also, you know what it is? It's the essence of bonding.
Yes.
You can have an experience that's good with another person, but it's when you created something with the other person that wasn't there. That's what bonds you.
Yes.
If parents would learn that with their kids.
Yes.
I had a friend who had a terrible relationship with his son, and I was trying to get across the point to him. What is important to your son must become as important to you as your son is to you.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, all that my son cares about is baseball. Do you have to make that important to me? I said, what is important to your boy must be as important to you. He literally took the summer, visited every major baseball club.
Wow.
And saw him play.
Wow.
And the son moved right through that phase.
Wow.
He wasn't arrested in that phase, fighting for his identity as an integrity. When he came back, we asked the father, did you like baseball that much? No, but I love my boy that much.
Wow.
And what a powerful bonding experience that was. That doesn't mean you get involved in drugs if they're involved in drugs. You don't want to violate your
thanks
principles.
Thanks for clarifying that.
You don't want to violate your principles.
Yes.
Point
yes.
is, you value that person, see?
Yes.
Well, habit seven is the habit of nurturing the other six on a consistent basis. It has to do with our four dimensions, the physical, the mental, the spiritual, and the social-emotional. And it's sharpening the saw. It comes from the story of someone What are you doing? Sawing down the tree. Well, how long have you been sawing down that tree? Oh, hours. I bet you're tired. Oh, I'm so beat up. Why don't you sharpen the saw? Too busy sawing, dum-dum. It's like too busy driving to get gas, you know. It's just utter foolishness. It's the, what I call the performance capability side, or the goose side of all of the other habits.
Yeah.
Where the other habits, in a sense, are the egg side. This nurtures it regularly.
So busy trying to produce the result, you're not doing what could help you get the result more consistently and more efficient. Wow. Let me ask you a question. I'm fascinated by something else. You are in great shape. You told me that you can't run. You have such a spark about you. People can't see you on an audio tape, but they can certainly hear the smile in your voice and your aliveness. You know, what do you do to sharpen the saw at a physical level? What do you do to sharpen the saw at a spiritual level? What do you personally do?
What I do personally is get on a bike, a stationary life cycle.
Yes.
I get up at 5:30. And I watch inspirational television. I also, during that hour, read the scriptures.
Yes.
Prayerfully. And I...
That's key, what you just said there. A lot of people read the scriptures, but they don't do it prayerfully.
And open. I think about it. I think what the scriptures mean for my day, this day. I go through that kind of affirmation of those 12 things, and I see the Savior that way, living those things. Then I remember when I have lived those things in my past. Then I anticipate how I can live those principles today.
So you every day recenter yourself, it sounds like.
Every day I have to. If I don't, you know, just like I go without a meal, I go without taking care of myself in any way, I start to suffer from it.
How many years have you been doing this?
I guess it's been about 25, 30 years.
Wow.
In fact, I was a professor when I was young. I guess I was about 22.
You're still pretty young.
Younger.
Yeah. 22 is when you started?
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. Tell me about your relationship with your wife.
Well,
she seems like she's a major part of it.
Oh, she's major. She is my counselor. I rely on her wisdom. She's got amazing wisdom. She can perceive things that I have no awareness of. I need her wisdom constantly. I never go a day that I don't have deep communication with her.
Yeah.
I mean, every night, makes no difference. And if I'm home, we go on a Honda 90 trail cycle. An old one, we just putt around the neighborhood, no phones. Yeah. If it's bad weather, we get in a car. But she and God are the nurturing sources. I also attempt to keep in contact with each of those children on a consistent basis, including my married children and the grandchildren. I see myself raising my great-grandchildren and my great-great-grandchildren. And I envision our 50th anniversary. We have with no empty chairs.
Yeah.
Everyone present.
Wow.
And Sandra and I see that together when we have our prayers together. I mean, you're getting me into a lot of more intimate personal stuff than I've ever gotten into.
I want people to know who you are. I think who you are is the ultimate model of your principles.
Right.
Someone could talk about it, but the reason I have so much love and respect for you is you live it. I look at you all
the time.
Well,
I try to.
I wish you had a camera on your face right now. I also, because I believe I've met very few people who've had the kind of wisdom and balance and impact that you have had, who've not had someone that they've shared their life with. How long have you been married? For how many years?
Well, I guess it's been about 37 years.
Wow. There's real success.
One last quote, maybe, that they might be interested in.
Yes.
Chardin. We are not human beings having a spiritual experience.
Yes.
We are spiritual beings having a human experience.
Yes.
Thanks to you, Tony.
God bless you.
And God bless you.